closer.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Right, well, let's jump in. Hey, everybody, welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul. I have Simon Cornell. And also, it's Marcus Monroe, everybody.
Probably the best magician here. So, feels good.
Do you have a background in magic, Marcus? You're a crazy physical comedian, stand-up comedian, juggler person.
I grew up with Ben Seidman, and we lived just a few blocks away from each other growing up. And so I started doing magic before I juggled, but it wasn't anything good. I got like the Chinese Lincoln Rings, Rocco the Raccoon, Ice Delight, some cups and balls. But then Ben and I met, and then I was like, oh, I just like juggling. And then I sold all my stuff to Ben at a very, very good price.
For you or for him?
For him.
Oh, okay.
He gave me like $20 for my like professional Chinese Lincoln rings. I think I spent like $60 on them, and it had like a nice case. But I mean, he's doing okay.
He's fine.
Like, I'm glad I sold it to him and not someone who like doesn't use it.
I feel like I just discovered the secret unknown Ben Seidman origin story that's never been told.
Oh my God. The context itself, for those who don't know, Ben Seidman stories.
Ben Seidman is a very experienced, very accomplished, very professionally renowned magician, for those who do not know. Because he's not like mainstream famous. He's very industry famous.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
And a nice man. A pleasant. I had an really unexpected cool lunch with him at Magic Live with somebody famous. I'm blanking on who I was even with, but it was nice to, we didn't know each other, and they're like, hey, come sit down by us. It was great. He's a very inviting gentleman.
He's very chill. Yeah, he's very cool. We get along.
So, Marcus, you've been making lots of funny videos. You have a great Instagram account.
Well, thanks, man.
How are you handling all this situation? Is the worry of all the gigs vanishing freaking you out at all, or is it just meh?
The funny thing is that my wife and I had planned like a 6-month hiatus anyways during this time. Like we weren't going to do any cruise ships. We were just going to take like some one nighters here and there and just kind of rework our show. And I've been doing like a lot of writing anyways, a lot more stand up than I have been in the past. So I like this kind of came at like a perfect time in a way, because we canceled maybe like 15 like really pretty nice gigs so far. Like, you know, March, April, May, June gigs have been canceled, and what one nighters, but we weren't really planning on going crazy this spring anyways. But that's been good. But I do think keeping like making videos and just putting stuff out there has kind of helped me creatively stay sane, and just even working and editing on videos, even if only like 1,000 people watch them, really, really helps.
So you were talking about how you plan to cancel like 6 months, and I was oddly in a similar spot too, where I'm like, oh, I'm gonna take a break from ships, and then all the ships went away. So it wasn't too much of a shock. I think it's gonna be more of a shock in the coming fall and December, but that's good that it wasn't like kind of an unexpected thing for you.
Yeah, I mean, I still lost a lot of work because I had a lot of comedy clubs booked and a few corporates and a ton of colleges actually in April. But yeah, being off ships was kind of planned for this time anyways. I do feel bad though for people who only are ship acts who don't have anything else right now, because, you know, you and I both know that tons of people are ship guys and, you know, don't maybe have been doing ships for so long, they don't even have connections on land. So when something happens on ships, you know, like there's, you know, like infamous stories of comedians who are ship guys and then for one reason or another have to leave their cruise ship line, and then no one knows them in comedy clubs. But I guess right now it's a little different, because even if you do have roots on land, there's no one to do a show for.
Yeah, it's gonna be, I'm very curious as to kind of like where the future is going to be with this, just in, you know, fall and December and then moving on forward.
It's funny, isn't it? The three of us have that in common, that all of us were kind of planning to dial it back a bit. And for me, it was partly because I knew about that risk, that those cautionary tales of, you get too caught up in the ship industry and you vanish from the rest of the world. That was one of the reasons I was already trying to pull back a bit.
Yeah, that's very smart. I think it's in general, as a performer, I have found that you want to have your hands in a lot of different markets. I know, Nick, you do a lot of colleges as well, but like colleges, corporate, comedy clubs, you know, which is whatever you can, just in case one market goes down, you can still, you know, I even did like a fairs and festivals showcase this like a couple months ago, and fairs and festivals have never been anything I wanted to do, but then they're like, oh, they paid this much. I'm like, what? All right, sure, why not? Give it a shot.
Yeah, it's pretty insane how certain fairs and festivals, I mean, who knows what it'll be this summer, but usually they have a decent budget for entertainment. But yeah, you're usually like, you're outside, there's a lot of haystacks, you don't know if there's going to be an audience.
Hey, man, I'm from Wisconsin, I'm okay with hay. Fine.
Yeah,
not a problem.
As long as you know what you're getting into. Like, I think it's good to have, it's important to have your hand in many different baskets of, you know, entertainment, but it's important to know what you're, like with ships, it's the travel. That's the hard part. With festivals, it's the maybe lack of audience or heat or performing outside or whatever. Corporates, it's going to be a lot of the times the audience of 300 that you're performing for found out there was a magic show about 20 minutes prior. And colleges, they just forget to advertise.
Oh, yeah. I think now, though, it's going to be really interesting because I know, like, my college agent has been asking me to put together a virtual show. I know other people have been doing, like, these virtual Zoom shows. And I really am curious as how that's going to be perceived, if it, because it's probably only been done a few times at this point.
Well, Simon, you just did that.
That's going to be the future.
Simon, can you comment on it? Because he literally just did one yesterday, I guess.
2 days ago.
I'm really curious. How did that go?
It was surprisingly good. So this is our good friend Joe Skilton, just LA magician, really good guy, had this booked from pre-pandemic. He was so ahead of the curve. And it was a group of sort of like fundraiser people who apparently have these monthly meetings on Zoom anyway from around the country. And tend to have already been booking sort of like events and stuff, little like fun things for their virtual meetings. And so we leaned fully into it. Joe asked myself and a couple of other people to get involved. And yeah, we did this like 4-person magic variety lineup show over Zoom. And it worked well because we adapted to it. We designed the show around the fact that it was going to be done over Zoom for a crowd who couldn't respond in normal ways. It was pretty solid. I think there's, obviously it's not nearly as good as doing it live, but I think there's far more potential in the format. Again, if you lean into the uniqueness of the format.
Yeah, I mean, right. Joe Skilton's amazing at that. Like, that doesn't surprise me at all that he adapted that quickly to that sort of situation. Yeah. That's pretty great.
Yeah, we should get him on for an episode. That'd be relevant.
We should. I don't know if you know who Joe Skilton is, Marcus, but he is He's brilliant at the corporate market here. He's one of those worker guys. Yeah.
Well, one of those people who understands this is, I was thinking about Marcus when you were talking about the fairs and festival circuit, which is something I've never really even thought existed. And it's
right.
You know, you learn how to juggle, you learn how to do magic, but it's hard to learn how to do the sale, how to run a small business, sales, market.
Oh, totally.
All the stuff.
And you see some of the people working these fairs and festivals, and they've put the time and the money into the business side, but not to the performing side. But really, you've got to invest an equal amount of time into both. Otherwise, you're going to just be doing stock stuff or someone, you know, doing Nick DeFate's material or something.
Which I get, which from the Facebook post seems to happen quite a bit.
That's a real epidemic right now.
Poor guy.
And I'm not making a judgment one way or the other. I'm just saying from looking at Facebook, it's like, oh, that seems to happen quite a bit for that gentleman.
Shit. I just realized that, Nick DeFart is the new Jay Marshall. He was like back in the sort of, I don't know, 50s or whatever. He was the magician. Magician comedian. Everyone was stealing his shit because he just had the best bits.
Mark, I sometimes see people stealing my stuff and like little lines here and there, not like whole routines of like what happened to Nick, but. And I've sent like some emails out, but I'm too like I hate confrontation so much that I'll just like let it go. At times, maybe I shouldn't, but I'm just like, it's not worth it. Whatever.
It's tough. I've been on the opposite end of it where somebody accused me of stealing the balloon thing from them who I've never met or seen before. And yeah, it is kind of enraging to be on the opposing end of that. So I and I'm the same way too, where I don't like confrontation. I don't want to hurt people's feelings. So it's a tricky thing when you do see somebody, yeah, using something that you're like, oh, that's kind of similar to something I came up with, but that's okay. I guess I should be honored.
I had like a weird thing happen to me at an airport where I was just sitting down, relaxing, minding my own business. And this juggler comes up to me and accuses me of like stealing his whole show. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I don't think you've ever seen my show. I haven't seen your, like, and he was like, yeah, man, you stole my show. Oh man, like you're doing my material. I'm like, what in the world are you talking about?
Wow.
And I like sat him down. I went through my show like bit by bit. I'm like, is this what you do? He's like, no. I'm like, okay. Then I do this. Is this what you do? He's like, no. I'm like, okay, so why are you saying that? He's like, well, I had some friends, they saw you and they said you're doing the exact same thing I'm doing. I'm like, that's, everyone says that to me. Everyone's like, oh, I saw you in Key West. I'm like, I've never been to Key West juggling. You know, like people just see one juggler and they think they've seen all of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
You mean other people are riding unicycles?
Exactly. That was the thing. Yeah.
It's interesting that sort of concept of what level of granularity a person is perceiving a thing with, e.g., oh, he threw stuff up in the air. Yeah, that's the same as that other act. That's identical. They did the same.
Right, and that's exactly what like people, civilians, let's call them, will think. Yeah. Sometimes they think that when they see, oh, I saw someone doing the exact same thing, even if it's completely different.
Yeah.
You know, we're still on a unicycle and juggling, so we're the same thing. I'm like, well, it's
and then
not
there's
really
still levels of interesting granularity. I mean, and this is true of every field in the world, whereas, you know, for example, I would know way more about juggling than a civilian, but way less than an actual juggler. And I've seen sort of, say a ring routine that was very different from another ring routine, but there were still differences I didn't notice about, you know, I know, hang out with juggler friends, I've described things. They've gone, yeah, there is no way that happened exactly the way you described it, because that's impossible, which I believe, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Memory and perception are inaccurate always, the less you know about the field.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, speaking to that, like, where do you, that sounds like a similarity with magic and juggling, but where, what are the biggest kind of like differences? And I mean, we're all the same kind of vein of variety arts, and we all battle people doing the same stock lines and people essentially doing, you know, similar versions of this, like magic. Everybody's doing the same, like eight effects, basically. In juggling, you're throwing stuff up and catching it and doing tricks. Like, where do you see the differences and where do you see the similarities?
Well, to me, it's pretty much all in like the presentation of it. You know, so many people can. Okay, so many jugglers can juggle knives, right? And build it up and make it scary and funny at the same time. But it's like how you do it, it's not really what you're doing, but how you do it. You can have great tricks and great technique and be a very gifted juggler. But if you don't have a good presentation to it, then you're going to lose me. Because you're like a unique presentation, like your true voice is really what's important. I think Harrison Greenbaum has like a great talk on this for magicians. It's something called like Why You're Terrible or something.
Yeah, it's great. It's really cool. Worth checking out for anybody.
He kind of breaks it down into you want to turn up yourself. Like you're taking aspects of yourself, like you're Clark Kent. When you're on stage, you're Superman. So like, what are you doing that's different than everybody else? And you put it in a smoothie, blend that up, and that's what you should be on stage. Something along those lines, he says. And it's like, when I heard, he like did a Facebook live yesterday or something for like some magic. Maybe it was IBM. I don't even know what it was.
He's doing like a billion of them right now. Scam School or something. IBM.
He's crushing it.
He's the hardest working man who is also unemployed. It's quite amazing.
Yeah, he's been waiting for this for so long. He's like, I'm ready. Good for him.
This is my chance. Yeah, so it's great.
But I think I think everybody finds their own voice a different way. Some people take from people who influence them. Some people just turn themselves up to the extreme. Some people are still trying to figure it out, but are still performing. So I think if you can find something that's specific to you and go with that, that, you know, no matter what you're doing, if it's something that other people are doing, juggling knives, for example, like I think that as long as you're doing it unique to you and different to you, I think that's what's important.
Yeah.
Yeah. It reminds me of juggling. Actually, Marcus, I'd love your thoughts on this. Way back, I think pre-YouTube, the whole Chris Bliss, Jason Garfield thing. So with that, right. Tell me if I get any of this wrong.
That's great.
Okay. This was one, and because it was that thing about that dichotomy you mentioned between technical jugglers versus what you're doing performance-wise with your skills. So comedian juggler, I think he used to be a juggler, became a comedian, but still did a juggling finale in his comedy shows. Chris Bliss did this video that went viral before that was a thing. This video went around of him basically doing just a three-ball juggling routine to a Beatles medley as the closer to his comedy show. And it got a massive standing ovation. And this video, this must have been like 18, 19 years ago, I think, just went everywhere. It was viral before viral was a thing. Everyone loved it. And then Jason Garfield, a very skilled, mostly technical juggler, I think, went, this is bullshit. Yeah. He's not doing anything impressive. He's just doing three-ball shit that everyone can do. And
he called it the Chris Bliss diss, right?
Yeah. And no one gave a shit because Jason basically didn't get it. He actually couldn't even see what it was people were responding to about this thing. I don't know. What's your take on the whole thing?
So people were responding to the fact that he was actually opening for Michael Jackson, if I'm correct.
Oh, really?
I that's where he was when he shot this video. Yeah.
Didn't even know that.
And so he's in front of tens of thousands of people doing this juggling act. He's really into it. Like, he's just feeling the music. Like, it looks almost like the balls are instruments and he's playing them to make the music.
Yeah.
And so I understand Jason's criticism of it. He's not doing anything hard. True. But he's taken very simple juggling tricks and put his unique spin on it and was able to move people doing that. Mm. Even if you're a civilian, even if you're a juggler, everyone can appreciate this guy's like really into, he's like really committing to this bit, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's a great thing, but that's kind of goes along the lines of what I'm talking about is, so he had this one thing that kind of worked for him, basic three ball juggling, but to music, choreographed beautifully, right? And then Jason's like, okay, like you said, I'm going to juggle five balls and do the exact same tricks and call it the Chris Bliss disc and show everyone that, you know, this is what's hard. Three balls isn't hard. This is what's hard. And during that time, there was like this, is juggling an art? Is it a sport? Kind of battle, which was so nerdy. So nerdy. And I'm so embarrassed that that even happened.
And don't worry, every art form has it.
Yeah, I bet. But it's just like jugglers are all like, listen, there's like 13 of us. We don't need to like hate on each other, you know? Like, I don't understand like the rivalries people have with other jugglers. I'm like, guys, like if you're making money juggling, you're winning. Like, it's not like,
well, it's because so the public silly. It's because the, as you said, the public thinks there's one juggler.
Mm-hmm.
They saw you in Key West.
That's right. Yeah, they think there's only one juggler and he lives in the basement of his parents' house like half the year. It's so ridiculous to me. And so there was like that big battle, and then I also think Jason, he's a very smart guy and I like him a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think he was just like, oh, maybe I can piggyback on this viral video fame and get some attention too by kind of showcasing technical juggling, which is what he's all about. So he's like, I don't think he really was trying to put down Chris. I think he was just saying, if you like this type of juggling, well, here, this is another type of juggling that can be done, and it's technical, and it can still be done to music and still be choreographed well, but this is like what I'm all about. So it was a really kind of a good way of you know, letting people know this isn't the only type of juggling out there. Yeah. Oh my God. I'm so embarrassed for what I just said. Oh God. Juggling.
Nah.
Like, we're talking about juggling. Weird. People are dying.
I it's a good distraction, but that's kind of how I always feel about being a magician, is that none of this matter. Like, we get so caught up in all like the intricacies and the details of he stole this or they're doing this similar. And I'm like, people are dying somewhere. People are doctors, you know, doing real jobs. Teachers, you know, are doing real jobs on a daily basis. We're just doing little make-em-ups and trying to make people forget their problems. And I think as long as you keep that in perspective, it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, of course, the three of us are all very passionate about variety in general. And we want to see it always thrive and, you know, and do well. It's just so funny. Like other people who aren't as invested as us probably listening to this kind of, I mean, I don't know why they'd be listening to this podcast if they're not.
We don't know why anybody listens either. It's okay.
But I'm saying, like, this is what we're doing.
I look at the downloads every week and go, huh, really?
Yeah, but you know why? Like, and honestly, real talk, the reason why some of the people who do listen to this are listening is the same reason why a lot of people watch Jugglers and watch Magic and actually do care about it is for some people, not everyone, like, and particularly for like people like the doctors who are working so hard saving lives and the engineers who are like trying to make the world better. Sometimes when you're just fucking tired and you want to watch a show, it fills a gap in your soul. Like think of how amazing shows you've seen have made you feel. Like that feeling when you see something so great. Again, like Chris Bliss's video, millions of people shared that because it awoke something within them. And isn't the saving a life, but it is worth something and it's worth a lot. Yeah. And we get there by caring about these minutiae. And caring so much. That's how we reach these heights. And so it is, it's not as valuable as saving a life, but it still can have so much value in the world.
Right. I don't think, like, a lot of people in the juggling community, for one reason or another, hated Chris's video, but he wasn't doing anything hacky. He wasn't doing anything stock. It was basic juggling, sure. But he was, no one had, and especially this video, when it became popular, you know, 20 years ago or something.
Yeah.
It was still like 20 years old from that point it became popular. It like reemerged. Didn't get popular like the week it happened.
Yeah.
So especially at that time he was doing that, the level of technical jugglers in the world were not good at all. And probably he was considered maybe one of the better ones because 40 years ago juggling wasn't what it was now, thanks to like YouTube and in the internet.
Yeah. Well, it's also important. Yeah. Like, I think it's so important in any field, and the sounds like magic and juggling are similar. I always try and look at my magic through complete civilian eyes. Because when I saw that Chris Bliss video, that was the most impressive juggling I had ever seen in my life at the time.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I was stunned. I'm like, holy crap, that's incredible. I wouldn't have thought you could juggle that well. And it's important to remember that the target audiences are not the experts. That's who we have to remember. That's who we're trying to affect with what we do. And if we lose touch with that, we can get sucked into mental traps.
And that's why I hate performing for other jugglers.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think they're expecting me to be like the most technical juggler in the world. Like, you know, they're expecting that, but I'm not. I like to be technical. I can juggle 7 balls and 5 clubs, which is a good area to be for a comedy juggler like I am. But I just hate other jugglers coming to my show and expecting a full-on juggling show when it's like 90% comedy and just a little bit of juggling.
Yeah. I would sort of, because a similar thing happens in magic, but I'd make the distinction that would be dipshit jugglers would expect that. Enlightened jugglers would go, yeah, that was a brilliant show because you used juggling to give people a great experience.
Right.
Like that's what matters, the experience of the crowd, not like how much could you jerk yourself off with technical proficiency.
Right.
There is obviously a time and a place for that. That's nothing wrong with that, but that's a different thing.
Right.
This kind of leads
especially if you're coming to one of my shows, I hope people know like what to expect at this point.
Well, this kind of leads me into like when we first met, which was like a year or two ago on a Disney ship. I was just, I had heard of you, but I had never seen you perform before. And then seeing your show just destroy on a Disney ship was so gratifying to me because you are doing what I perceive to be kind of alt comedy, very almost Steve Martin-esque, finding the laugh for yourself type of thing. And the fact that it's working in for like, you know, cruise ships are mainstream America. They don't see a bunch of kind of alt weird comedy. And I was just so thrilled to see it just destroying on the ship. And
thank you.
Yeah, it was.
It took a while to find that because on Disney Cruise Lines, especially, it took 6 months maybe of me trying to find out what does work on the ship. It's a different beast than a typical cruise line, I think. You know, you have families, you have people from, you know, I think all cruise ships kind of have like the older crowd, but this one is really skewed younger. And but also college kids come alone by themselves, and you have just all ages, middle America. And so, yeah, it is hard to find what works on certain cruise ship lines. And I think the more comfortable you are in one line, then you try to do that same act in another line, it's not going to work.
Yeah, that's something Simon and I talk about quite a bit, of just like being able to make your show work for any type of audience. I think people get too comfortable with, you know, one particular type and aren't up for the challenge of, I don't know, the difficulties that come with that, I guess.
Yeah, but thank you so much for saying that. And I remember like talking to you about what works on Disney and what doesn't work, you know, what works in other, you know, on Royal Caribbean won't work on Disney, vice versa. And like helping you try to create like different layers to the show that the Disney audiences seem to be used to, more character driven
sure.
Performances.
Yeah, you gave me a bunch of brilliant notes. And yeah, it's such a detailed beast. And every time I do them, I get the weirdest notes back. And they're all not incorrect. I look at them and go, okay, yeah, that makes mm-hmm. sense. But at the same time, I see other performers doing the exact same thing I'm getting notes on and go, all right. But I've just kind of learned to make peace with it.
I think that's a good thing, though, because that I think like anytime you get notes, especially from the people who are booking you, it definitely means like, hey, we care about you. Here's what we want you to do so you can stay here. You know, it doesn't mean like you're terrible. You know, if they didn't have faith in you, they wouldn't put in the energy to give you any feedback, which is because some people I've talked to, they do their show and then you're like, it was perfect. No notes. And then I never see them again, you know?
Yeah. It's something I've noticed a lot, because more and more I'm finding myself directing other performers as that's sort of a part of that. I'm probably going to be doing a lot more of it now as there's fewer shows and more sort of coaching, training, teaching. But a show that I really like, I have so many more critical notes on it than a show I didn't like because I care enough. So this is great. Mm-hmm. Here are all the tiny things about it that are slightly wrong or could be better to make it amazing. But the one I just thought was trash, it's like, oh, fuck. Yeah, I don't know. Go back to the drawing board. Really? Just what do you say?
Yeah, it is hard when you see a show that just doesn't work. And there's, you know, I knew an act too that I saw on ships that was kind of having a hard time getting bookings, and I gave them notes and they just didn't take them. And I feel like if they just would have listened to me, I'm not saying I have all the answers, but you know, don't ask for criticism and then not be able to adapt to like some basic notes given to you.
Yeah, completely.
You see that with a lot of certain cruise lines. I see that more. They will remain nameless. Certain ones, which I will say, like Disney, for the most part, everybody is a solid performer who is open to taking notes or has done the work to get to where they need to be. And then other cruise lines, you see people performing, and it's just it's exactly what you described. It's like, well, it's good enough. It's fine. You know, I'm getting booked right now, so what's the difference? But in reality, I think you should always be, you know, striving to make the. It's funny. It's like the last cruise ship show I did, I finally felt comfortable in the show. I felt like everything I had worked on over the past year had finally come together. I put in these kind of new pieces, and they're not perfect. They have a long way to go, but it finally felt like, oh, this is a much more solid cruise ship show for this type of audience. And now all the cruise ship shows are stopped. But it was a good feeling, at least for, you know, a couple of weeks.
Yeah. I always think sort of the mindset of, I want to look back every, say, 6 months to 1 year at my material 6 months to a year ago and be embarrassed about how much worse it is. Like, that's where you want to be. That's a healthy place to be.
Yeah.
Be constantly pushing upwards aggressively in your skill set.
Yeah, if I don't feel the need to like want to update my reel with a better version of the trick from 6 months earlier, then you're kind of at a part of, you're just kind of stale at that point.
Mm-hmm. And also, especially on Disney, and I'm sorry to make this such like a heavy Disney cruise line.
Let's talk about Marcus on Disney.
No,
we just did an episode with Armstrong, and all he talked about was being trapped on Disney, so it's fine.
This is, oh God, well, this is probably, just for me, it's relatable to Disney, but I'm sure other people can relate to this in other ways, but a lot of people there come back a couple times a year, and
yeah.
they cruise a couple times a year, and they see me, and so I have that extra added pressure of trying to make this show updated enough that people don't get bored with it, or start saying, hey, we're seeing all the same shows over and over, because they have like these Broadway style production shows and they have like four fly-ons, and a lot of the fly-ons don't change anything in their show. A lot of them are just like, this works, this is my show, I'm going to do it word for word every single time. Not a lot of people, but there's a good amount. And so I don't want to be one of those people where they know the show beginning, middle, and end. I want to try to change it up a little bit and have spontaneous things happen, or little bits taken out, taken in, always kind of reworking it, which is very hard, especially on the ship and the cruise line, where you have to be so careful what you do and what you say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think that's a that's those people that are not updating their acts, that's a dated sense from the 80s and 90s when you could get away with that. But now people are so expectant of comedians to have a new special every year that it's strange to them to be seeing the same material if they do see you a second or third time. So that's a good thing to keep in the back of your head.
And also, you know, it's a good thing if you are able to do that. If you go, if you perform at a college, just be like, hey, I have another new hour, you know, every year. If you want to have me back next year, it'll be all different. It's great. If, I mean, first of all, and like, I'm trying to write a new hour of comedy for all new for next year already. And it's so hard. It is the hardest thing I've ever done.
Oh, yeah.
It is insane. So props to you if you can do that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Especially now, I can't.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've been writing so much during the quarantine, but I don't know if anything really works because I haven't gone up to try it.
Yeah, that is the ironic thing, is you need the audience.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if I mean, juggling, I think one of the things it has in common with magic is particularly the actual juggling parts. Like, new magic material takes so long to make good. You can have an adequate new routine very quickly, but to the things that are the polished, brilliant gems, they take years to polish and refine and grind in to get them to really A-level.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. It sucks.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on, Marcus. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. It's not good. It's, you know, and the funny thing is, too, is like, I've been working a lot more on stand-up, and I'll spend a couple hours a day mining for jokes, you know, just writing pages and stuff. And then I'll find something, oh, this could be funny. And then I'll say it on stage and it gets a laugh. And then like, okay, this I can always say. And that took maybe like 6 hours to write one joke, maybe one 30-second joke, which seems like a lot of time. But take that to like the 10,000 hours you spend learning a new juggling routine or pattern.
Yeah.
And like for some reason, for me at least lately, I get more out of a new joke working than I do a new juggling pattern or trick working.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's instant gratification right there. I mean, it's not, it's instant gratification. 6 hour exactly. Gratification as opposed to, like you said, many, many hours. So it's a different way for your brain to.
It's a different type of work. Mm-hmm. It's a different type of work. And some jokes take less time to write. Some, you know, like there was one night I wrote 3 really good jokes that I use in my show in like 10 minutes. And that was like, that has never happened. But it's just so ridiculous because, you know, here I have been going to the gym every day for 2 hours for as long as I can remember to keep my juggling up top notch, and no one cares, you know, but if I like have a really good joke, it's like, wow.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also probably I find this as well. There's also just the novelty factor, a thing that's new and unfamiliar. You're so used to juggling now. That's so familiar to you, whereas comedy is less so. So it's more, there's probably that element of excitement of it's a different thing.
Completely. You're totally right. You're totally right. Because if I was doing comedy for 20 years and then was like, I'm going to juggle now. You're right. I'd be like, this juggling thing is so awesome.
Yeah. I fucking love they the reactions it gets are so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Just, you're totally right. You're totally right. And that's why I'm just speaking for myself, not for everybody else. Yeah. But yeah, it's for me right now.
I think it's always useful to when rarely we can find a way to externalize it to the universal experience of, the thing you're unfamiliar with will be exciting and cool. And that can be a good thing to lean into and also be aware that not to forget the power of what you already have that doesn't seem amazing or great to you, but will to an audience who isn't as familiar as you are.
Yeah, I'm going through that right now too. I'm just doing this streaming show with Taylor Hughes, and Marcus, I think you're going to be on this Wednesday if you're still available at 10 sure. p.m. your time. It's been super fun, and we've been writing. I did it today. I just wrote monologue jokes, and I'm like, this is so exciting because it's so out of what I'm used to doing. I'm used to like working out a magic routine, a beginning, middle, and end, and this is just like I got to find a punchline to this news story, and this is really exciting. So it is that novelty of it being brand new and a new trick for your brain. So I'm right there with you.
Mm-hmm. It's really fun. I would love, again, your insight as far more knowledgeable. I worked a bunch in 2012. Yeah, end of 2012. I worked at a German variety theater for 4 months, which was a fascinating experience in a variety show, old school. And there was a French juggler who was at one point, we were just outside. We were just talking about audience reactions. And again, this thing you talked about that, you know, the civilian doesn't see the quality in terms of the skill. And in the most perfect sort of French with a long drag on his cigarette, he sort of said, you spend years to do the amazing thing. You have the skill and finally you can do the, you know, juggle the six balls, drags on the cigarette, but they just want to see you eat the apple.
Right. That's so true.
Just juggle three apples while eating them.
That's so true.
Yeah, that they so often don't see the skill.
Hmm.
They, I think they're kind of used to seeing that, the eating the apple, the egg, the bowling ball, the axe. I think the fire, the knives, of course. That is just what, you know, if you don't do that, you're not good. You know? I think that's a lot of yeah. people have that mindset. So the goal is to find a way to do all that stuff, which is considered maybe hacky stock material, in a good way.
Yeah.
A way that not a lot of people do that.
Yeah. A way that's fresh and unique and uniquely you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I should also say I have no idea
what I'm talking about.
We don't either. We've been doing it for several years, and for some reason, once again, people listen. We don't know
that's
why.
It's also good. That's that sort of the, I forget which philosophy it is, but the maintaining the mind of the beginner. Always open, always discovering, always learning.
But I'm also very easily swayed. Like I could wake up really strongly sided on like one specific, you know, opinion I have on something, on technical juggling, for example, then someone else just be like, no, you're wrong. I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. Like I'm very easily,
you make a good very point. Easily swayed.
Well, like with so many things, there's a happy medium in all that, isn't there? You don't want to be too clinging to one thing, but you do want to have some views based on experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, any last thoughts, Simon, any questions you want to ask before we wrap this bad boy?
Oh, not really. It was just one more thought on that was, there was a guy, Jeff Atwood, writer online. I really like, I don't think it was his idea. He referenced it, but the idea of having strong opinions weakly held, because you want to have strong opinions because that's how you get things done. You go, I think this is going to be great. Let's do it. But also being completely open to changing those opinions in the light of different evidence if you see a good reason not to. So like if you don't have strong opinions, you'll just be like, oh, I don't know. But if you hold them too strongly, you'll be insensitive to feedback.
I disagree. I'm just kidding. That sounds good.
I'm listening.
No, I'm just kidding. I agree now.
His lightly strong opinion was that he disagrees, but then he changed his mind. So
exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Well,
it's been a pleasure meeting you, Marcus. Yeah, this is the first time we've
ever nice to meet you too.
Appreciate it. Where can people follow you and see all your fun shenanigans on the internet on your Instagram?
Yeah, so you just Google like Instagram Marcus Monroe. My handle is at Marcus J Monroe. I'm on TupacIsStillAlive.com is my website. So that,
what?
So that's my actual website.
How did you get that? Okay, this interview just got a lot longer. How did you get that domain name?
Wait, what? I couldn't even make out what you said. Tupac,
the rapper, is still alive.com.
Tupac is still alive.com. Oh, right. That's funny. Yeah.
That's actually been my website for like 12 years. I just bought it one day.
Do corporate bookers ever look at that and go, interesting?
it gets a lot of traffic, like whenever there's like a Tupac story out. And what was kind of funny about it is after every show, I would always just yell, but all right, guys, thank you so much. TupacIsStillAlive.com. And it would get a little laugh. And then I like was like, you know what? I don't even own that domain. And this was like 2 years. Every show I'd say that. And I was like, I don't even, like, people are probably going there. And I was like, well, so I just bought it. I was like, let's see if it's even available. I didn't even know where I was sending people.
Oh man.
But it turns out it wasn't taken. So I took it and, then it just forwards to like my actual site, like, which is like MarcusMonroe.com. But I just tell people it's TupacIsStillAlive.com because it's funnier and it's oddly easy to remember.
They need to video people typing that in and then seeing your website pop up.
Mm-hmm. That is so funny. People get so disappointed.
I love that.
Have you gotten any like angry mail from it? Emails?
Not like okay, like maybe like five times. I've like throughout 10, like maybe once every other year I get a email being like, why is your Tupac, what does it have to do with Tupac or something? And I'm just like, he was a good juggler. I don't know. Guys, I don't know. I didn't think it through.
That's brilliant. That's why you're one of my favorite performers. So I appreciate you coming on and making the time during this quarantine.
Likewise. Thanks, bud.
That's freaking awesome. How is the wife, Nick?
Oh, she's great. She's writing and, you know, it's funny. Our life really hasn't changed that much. And I think Simon and I have talked about this too. And maybe you can relate. It's like we're cruise ship performers, so we're used to being locked in a very small space for weeks at a time. This isn't too much of a change for us. Maybe for you in New York it's different, but for us over here we have a tiny bit more space to move around.
Yeah, I mean, like my wife and I were saying that like every sea day we've ever done has been like preparing preparing us for this in a way. I just wanted to end soon, but we joke about it, but at the end, it's like a lot different than a sea day, though, too.
Sure. Yeah.
Because a sea day, like, you can't go anywhere. And here, you can. You just shouldn't.
Yeah. There's no buffet. Yeah. There's no evening show. Like, at least with a sea day, you have, like, a structured out. Like, for me in the morning, I'll get some coffee. I'll go to the gym. I'll do some writing. I know I have dinner time at, like, 6, and then there's a show. We'll go see. So, like, the whole day is structured out. Here, you have to kind of do that for yourself in order to not go insane.
Right. Yeah. I was going to do the transatlantic crossing on the Disney Magic this May.
Oh, wow.
It goes from like Miami, then 6 days at sea, which is two more than I've ever done in a row. Going to like the Azores, someplace in like in Portugal. Don't know if that's still happening. I would doubt it, but I might be quarantined on a ship in like a month and a half.
Look forward to it. I mean, my May ship week that I had just got canceled. So it's possible. That wasn't Disney. That was a different cruise line. So they're all kind of making up their own rules. And I saw today in Norwegian, our cruise ship agent or somebody sent it out, like Norwegian still plans to open April 11th, which I'm like, all right, somebody's not planning very well on their end. Everyone else is like May or end of May.
That would not be smart if they did that. But yeah. I understand the want to get back to work as soon as possible. But it doesn't mean it's just you got it. Yeah, I mean, of course, everyone wants that, but you doesn't can't do it too idea. Fast. Right.
Yeah. Otherwise, all of this will have been for nothing. So stupid.
God, I hope people are coming to us for virus like.
Well, this is the number one virus podcast.
Great.
I feel like we can give certain tips on very specific things. So if we can help in some small way, that's all I care about.
Well, Nick, let's go and work out how to do a live online version of Magic Smackdown for this apparently suddenly growing online virtual show market.
We can do it. We can do it. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
All right, pal. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you guys so much. You guys enjoy your quarantine and stay safe.
Oh no, we've lost them. We've lost them.
Stay home. Stay safe. Did I do it right?
I think so.
Yeah, we got there.
It's okay.
It's a good thing I don't talk for a living.
Yeah, I know. That's a good thing.
Thank you, guys. TupacIsStillAlive.com.
Good to know. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemic.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at @twomagiciansonemic. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.